News on WBOB, AM 600 and 101.1 FM.
Good morning, I'm Jerry Lederman. A retired Jacksonville sheriff's officer finds himself on the other side of the law today. The sheriff's department says 67-year-old James Tresbell is facing several charges of sex crimes against minors over many years. Investigators think all of the victims have been identified, but they want to hear from anyone else who has information about Tresbell. Police are looking for a man who they say barged into an elderly Jacksonville Beach residence home, assaulted the man, and stole his credit card. A surveillance video shows the suspect in that home invasion using that stolen card the next day at a nearby Walmart. A police report says the victim apparently knew his attacker through some earlier handiwork around his house, and that the crime was likely planned out. Experts say the case points out you should be very careful about hiring anyone to do small jobs around your house. That's Jacksonville.radio News.
Good morning. If you're at I-295 going south at the Pulaski Road exit, we're seeing backup there already. I'm not quite sure what the problem. It could be an accident. We'll keep an eye on it for you. I-10, I-95, and Butler Boulevard are currently problem-free. Mostly cloudy today, but only a 1 in 10 chance of rain, 72 the high. This evening, a few clouds and a low of 66. Right now, it is 63 here at WBOB. Here's some of the top stories we're bringing you this morning. Climate researchers are being called out for predictions they made years ago concerning the environment that didn't happen. The U.S. Court of Appeals upholds former Representative Corrine Brown's federal fraud convictions. And a new poll finds most Americans say they are financially better off today than they were 4 years ago.
Contact the Ed Dean Radio Show on AM 600 WBOB by calling 831-0600, 831-0600, or email ed@wbob.com. AM 600 and 101.1 FM, WBOB.
4 minutes after 6 a.m., good morning, Ed Dean, Roger Henderson, all the way with you this Friday morning to 9 a.m. Good to have everybody here. Sit back. We got a lot of news to get to you right here, as we do it every morning on Talk Radio WBOB. All right, Ed Dean, Roger Henderson. Roger, let's get to some of the other big news out there. The U.S. House approves a non-binding Iran War Powers resolution stating that if needed, President Trump, if he wants to use military action, he can't do it without congressional approval. Wait till you hear some of these clips. Kicking it off, who's this one right here? We're going to start off this one.
The idea is limiting the president.
Yeah, I want to get to that one in a second. Here is Lou Dobbs from the Fox Business Network.
House of Representatives voted in favor of a war powers resolution. The resolution, simply a symbolic act, non-binding only. But it was aimed at rebuking the president's order to kill not only Iran's deadliest terrorist, but one who was responsible for the deaths and the wounding of hundreds of our troops. 224 to 194. Three Republicans sided with the radical Dems. Eight Democrats joined the Republicans.
The idea. All right, now let me stop right there. So this was all because Florida Republican Matt Gaetz voted in favor of this.
I saw that.
Only three Republicans, and Francis Rooney is retiring, and down in the Seminole County area, Stephanie Murphy, the Democrat, voted with the Republican. She voted against this. Here's a little bit. It's non-binding. Fox News, Mike Emanuel.
Is limiting the president's authority to take further military action against Iran. The resolution reads, Congress has not authorized the president to use military force against Iran. Congress hereby directs the president to terminate the use of United States armed forces to engage in hostilities in or against Iran or any part of its government or military. Democrats say it will limit President Trump's military actions in the future against Iran, but the truth is, it is non-binding. This is mostly a campaign document. Again, it is non-binding. It does not tie the commander-in-chief's hands, but it does allow Democrats up for re-election to say they voted to stop the president from further action against Iran.
So it's a non-binding resolution. Again, it's mostly, some would say, a PR stunt. Everybody's trying to focus on the Republicans. Three Republicans voted in favor of it. Eight Democrats voted with the Republicans, but one Republican that stood out, a staunch defender of President Trump, Florida Republican Matt Gaetz.
The overwhelming majority of the votes were from Democrats. A few Republicans joining in. The vast majority of Republicans voted against it. The one surprise so far on the GOP side was Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz, who supports President Trump, but voted in favor of the measure. Gaetz said if our service members have the courage to fight and die in these wars, Congress ought to have the courage to vote for or against them. And then he announced he was voting for the resolution.
Here is Representative Gaetz. This is what he said on the House floor.
This resolution offers no criticism of the president, no critique. It doesn't criticize the president's attack on Soleimani. As Congress, we ought to have the courage to vote for him or against him. And I think it's ludicrous to suggest that we are impairing the troops from doing their job by not doing our job articulated in the Constitution to speak to these matters of war and peace. I support the president. Killing Soleimani was the right decision, but engaging in another forever war in the Middle East would be the wrong decision. And that's why I'm voting for this resolution.
All right, so we'll hear from some of you whether you believe that is consistent or not. The War Powers Resolution, even though it's non-binding, was needed. Here's House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
We must avoid war. And the cavalier attitude of this administration, it's stunning. And the president to say, oh, I inform you by reading my tweets. No, that's not the relationship that our founders had in mind.
So she says it shouldn't have to do anything with tweets, given whether or not the president, as one of the biggest complaints from the Dems, is that he did not give them a heads up when he wanted to go after the terrorists, the Iranian general. He was asked whether you would give Congress a future heads up. This is how the president responded.
He would inform Congress prior to taking military action in the future. The president left that door open just a crack.
It would all depend on the circumstance. I don't have to, and you shouldn't have to be able, because you have to make split-second decisions sometimes. Sometimes you have to move very, very quickly, John. But in certain cases, I wouldn't even mind doing it.
Certain cases, he wouldn't even mind doing it. And some people say, well, was it constitutionally authorized to take out this terrorist out there? Listen to the former Obama Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, Jay Johnson.
What I have said is that under existing Office of Legal Counsel opinions on the president's constitutional authority to engage the armed forces without a congressional authorization, if you read those opinions, he had ample constitutional authority to take out General Soleimani.
So he did have constitutional authority, but according to he doesn't think, I don't know, what's in the Constitution. Well, according to the guidelines, he did have the authority. But let us go back in time. We know we have all of these clips I'm able to get a hold of. 2011, the Democrats control the House and the Senate, and there were certain attacks in Libya. Nancy Pelosi then, who was also a House Speaker, was asked by the media, hey, do you believe that the president then needed war authorization to use force in Libya? Listen to what she said.
So, Madam Speaker, Madam Leader, you're saying that the president did not need authorization initially and still does not need any authorization from Congress on Libya?
Yes.
Yes, she stands by. So she didn't need authorization back then, but Trump needs authorization today.
Exactly. You know, it's amazing the double standards, but it's blatant and people see it and they're right. Not dumb. Yeah.
Well, I hope so. Of course, then again, the Democrats are out there. Collateral damage was that Ukrainian plane, and somehow they blame Trump on that. You saw that? Give me a break.
That's right. And, you know, the recent story is now the Iranians are inviting Boeing, an American company, and the federal government division, the National Transportation Safety Board, to come in and look and see what happened. The Iranians are inviting us in.
Yeah, but listen, for those of you
all
out
things,
there.
They shot it down. They thought it was an American bombing.
But here's the thing. American companies do business with Iran.
Yeah.
GE's done. I'm not calling them traitors. I'm just telling you.
But the NTSB has also been invited in as well.
Okay, so they've been invited. Big deal. I mean, here's the thing. Do you know under the 2015 Obama nuclear deal with Iran, U.S. Investigators along with some of the UN could come and investigate? Oh, but you got to give us a week heads up so we can move everything around.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I do believe, however, it speaks to Iran's desire not to have war with America, and they want to play nice.
You think so?
Yeah, I think they got the message.
Here is the War Powers debate. This is one of the best clips we were able to get a hold of. Here is one of my favorites, North Carolina Republican Mark Meadows. He is ruthless on the Democrats. Clip number nine.
I never thought that I would hear on this House floor an apology to the Iranian people for an action that we took that was justified taking out our terrorists. And yet we're apologizing to the Iranians with a non-binding resolution that is nothing more than a press release.
He says it's window dressing. Here's the point. Why would you pass a non-binding resolution? It's all a PR stunt.
Madam Speaker, it has no effect. It doesn't do anything. I would ask my colleagues opposite, how many Americans does a terrorist have to kill before they join with us? Is 600 not enough?
Ah, interesting. It's funny because the media, I understand why the media is making a big hype with Matt Gaetz. Matt is a staunch defender of President Trump.
Right.
To me, it was even more interesting that 8 Democrats sided with the Republicans and voted against that. But of course, then again, that doesn't get much attention.
Could you also say that it could be perceived as diplomatic posturing to let the people of the Middle East know that, hey, we really don't want war on every front.
We're not on the same page. You really believe that?
I don't know if it has a negative effect. I think it could kind of calm things down, even though I don't necessarily support the resolution.
Okay, so Roger's asking a question, and it's a valuable question, maybe. I don't know. Is it viable as well that this was the right thing to send? So it shows that we don't want war
in the
Middle East?
I wouldn't word it that way.
How would you word it?
I would say that even though I don't necessarily support the resolution, and of course it has no teeth to it, is there a glimmer of good in it in that it sends a message to the Middle East that the diplomatic posturing that we don't necessarily want war on every level. We're not in complete unity on that.
Okay, so let me rephrase this. You believe, you think it's possible this may show a glimmer of hope mm-hmm. that we don't want war.
Right. Right.
Or,
it's a type of olive branch to the Middle East symbolically.
Okay, so let's phrase this to the audience out there. Does Roger have a point?
We've got domestic consumption. We've got political, PR, as it was a political PR press release. And we also have to think about our international diplomacy, how we're being perceived in the hearts of those in the Middle East. And I think when you think about that front and that group of people, I think it kind of calms things down and kind of deflates things.
Okay,
lowers the temperature.
So we're asking you right now, or do you believe on the other side, this resolution shows that, we're sorry for what we did. Some people may say that. I'm not saying you are right.
Right.
It's a good question. And that's one of the things
we're
asking.
And I'm not talking about Americans. I'm talking about people in the Middle East who are now hyped up about committing terrorist acts against America and retribution.
Yeah, I'm sure that's going to stop all the terrorism. All right.
Maybe it stops some.
Ed Dean, Roger Henderson. 14 minutes after 6 a.m., 831-0600. 831-0600. So Roger, let's ask this question. Roger's saying, hey, maybe this non-binding resolution will show that diplomatically, we don't want to go into war, and maybe it will not enhance any other type of terrorism out there. Or do you believe this non-binding war resolution was nothing more, as Mark Meadows says, we're apologizing to the Iranian government out there? What is your view on this? 831-0600, 904-831-0600. 0600 Talk Radio WBOB.
If you're 295 South in Ocean Way at the Pulaski exit, we're seeing a lot of backup there. Could be a broken down car causing the problem. 10, I-95, and Butler Boulevard are all currently problem free.
This traffic report is brought to you by J. David Tax Law. When you owe the IRS and can't pay, go to jdavidtaxlaw.com. Peace of mind is only a click or phone call away.
Here is some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for health insurance, or if you sign up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare. It's the affordable alternative to health insurance, and it's worked beautifully for 25 years. They have more than 400,000 members now around the country. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry, and over the years, members have shared over $3 billion of each other's medical bills, so they could help share your needs too. And best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is about $500 a month. Your savings could be more or less, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. You're not stuck with a high-cost health plan. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. Here's the number to find out more, and there's no pressure. They are super easy to talk to. Call 877-64-BIBLE. That's 877-64-BIBLE. 877-64-BIBLE.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, and as you know, my passion is to help each and every one of you get the best sleep of your life. That's why I created my new Giza Dreams bed sheets. I started by using the world's best cotton called Giza. It's only grown in a region between the Sahara Desert, the Mediterranean Sea, and the Nile River, where the weather conditions are perfect for one crop, cotton. My bed sheets are ultra soft, breathable, and extremely durable. They come in a variety of colors, and now for a limited time, when you use your promo code, I'll give you my best offer ever. Buy one set of my Giza Dream Sheets and get another set absolutely free. I guarantee they're going to be the most comfortable sheets you'll ever own.
For limited time, go to MyPillow.com. When you buy a set of Giza Sheets, Mike will give you a set of Giza Sheets for free when you use promo code WBOB or call 800-950-9024 and give them promo code WBOB for this fantastic offer.
I'm Sebastian Gorka, and this is what you missed on America First. Bloomberg is going to announce that he's running for president. That is an utter and complete indictment of the whole struggle bus. A man who really has the charisma of an old shoe that your dog has chewed over the years. He's getting into the race. What does that mean? It means that they're in trouble.
America First with Sebastian Gorka. Weekdays 3 till 5 on WBOB.
Cloudy today, only a 1 in 10 chance of rain. 72 the high. There will be a few clouds tonight and a low of 66, and right now it's 63 at WBOB.
Financial Issues with Dan Celia at 9 this morning. Now, back to the Ed Dean Radio Show on AM 600 and 101.1 FM, WBOB.
Here's some of the top stories we're bringing you this morning. The U.S. House approves a non-binding Iran war powers resolution, stating that if the president needs to use military action against Iran without congressional approval. The U.S. Supreme Court, begins looking at several significant cases, and Democrats are claiming victory for wages going up. They say it's because some states are raising their state's minimum wage.
Contact the Ed Dean Radio Show on AM 600 WBOB by calling 831-0600, 831-0600, or email ed@wbob.com, AM 600 and 101.1 FM. WBOB.
Let's continue on with the program. Ed Dean, Roger Henderson. Listen to CNN, Allison Camerato, and Dana Bash. How can we trust the military that Iran, the U.S. military, this White House says, according to Pentagon officials, that Iran, even though they might have missed some of the targets that took place recently a few days back to kill Americans at that U.S. airbase, even though they didn't, how can we trust our military to tell us that Iran was trying to kill Americans? Listen to this clip.
He just said on a different morning show that they have the intelligence to support that Iran fired those missiles intending to kill Americans. How can we trust that what he's saying there, since they have presented none of the intelligence to the American public, and many of the lawmakers who've seen it dismiss the intelligence as being woefully scant?
Where were these questions during the Obama years when he wanted to go after those in Libya and those in Syria?
I've seen reporting, including and especially at CNN, that says the opposite, that what Iran was doing where the missiles hit, that they intended to send a message and not to kill anybody, to de-escalate. If they are saying that, that will be important to back up. But it's curious that he would say that.
It's curious. So we're going to take the words of the Iranian government over the U.S. military. That's pretty much what it is. That's pretty much what they're saying in that as well. According to The Economy, new poll is out. Most Americans say they are better off today than they were 4 years ago. MSNBC, Stephanie Rowley.
A number that should concern Democrats looking ahead to November. We're talking about the economy. It's a strong one. A majority of Americans are saying President Trump's policies have helped the economy. But the big question is about you. Are you better off than you were 4 years ago? Well, for the first time in a Financial Times poll, a majority of Americans, 51%, now believe President Trump's policies have either strongly or somewhat helped the economy. Here's what's noteworthy. Last month, Just 44% believe President Trump's policies had helped the economy, and now that's jumped to 51%.
So those numbers have actually increased. Here's the question I ask you. Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? The Financial Times editor, Peter Spiegel, says that the economy even shows that lower wages, those on the lower income wages, are actually seeing a pay increase.
But I think the other thing that's beginning to happen is the tight labor market has begun to see a rise in wages, particularly on the low end of the economy. So these poorest off, the lowest workers, are beginning to see real wage increases. I think Trump is suddenly getting credit for this amongst voters who otherwise would be more skeptical.
According to Spiegel, even says even Democrats, according to the recent poll, are happy with the economy.
Although there still is a big partisan split, so Republicans still think are way more positive about Trump policies than Democrats. The numbers for Democrats are also going up, saying that Trump policies are helping the economy.
So even some of those in the Democratic side are at least admitting on Democratic voters that the Trump economy is helping them in their back pocket. But then again, does the president really deserve the credit? Why not any credit towards that of former President Barack H. Obama, Keith Metrick, CEO of Amalgamated Bank?
Keith, has the Trump economy been good to the customers of your bank?
Trump economy, how much of it's attributable to Donald Trump and how much attributable to Barack Obama is hard to discern.
I don't get it. What do you mean it's hard to discern out there? If the economy was turning around during the Obama years, could you? I'll tell you what I'll do. Let's even go back further. Remember the 1990-1991 recession from August to maybe April underneath George H.W. Bush. Tax increases, huge environmental regulation, American with Disabilities Act. I mean, it was a really a... Some would have called him a good friend of the Democrats. Great, very cool president when you look at the history of George H.W. Bush. But really, Clinton was more conservative fiscally, probably more than him and his son when it came to the economy, believe it or not, except for the huge tax increase. But having said that, when you look at what took place in the 1990s, the economy technically was coming back under W, but at a slow rate. Mm-hmm. But could you not say that, well, the economy was technically coming back under W when Clinton, well, wait a second. Obama's last year was 1.6 GDP growth rate and an increase due to a lot of the deregulation and tax cuts and the economic situation underneath this administration. How in the world, I keep asking, is Barack Obama given the credit? Because if the market goes down, oh, it's Trump's fault. If the deficit goes up, it's Trump's fault. And I would agree with that because Trump does own the economy. But if the economy is doing well, it's all laid at the foundation of Barack H. Obama.
You're not hearing objective talk when you hear people make these statements. They're political posturing going on, and they're trying to make their side look like they're the ones responsible so they can win future elections.
Yeah, so they can win future elections. But now Democrats say, you guys ready for this? That if the economy's turning around in many of these states, guess what the main reason why? It's because states have enacted a minimum wage increase.
Some of this is because a lot of states, which frankly are run by Democrats, are instituting minimum wage increases. So these blue-collar jobs are beginning to see increases for reasons other than Trump.
Again, that's the Financial Times. So is that a valid argument? I mean, I got to tell you, the spin, if I'm a Democratic consultant, I like that spin. Democrats are saying the reason why that lower income wages are going up is not because of the president's policies, but because of all these minimum wage laws that have been enacted in California, New York. And by the way, some of these just are going within some of the constitutional items in Florida. They don't go up a lot. They go by maybe 10, 15 cents, but they go up. So they say that's the reason why the wages are going up. The Democrats say this has nothing to do with Trump's policy.
Well, how do you explain the bonuses that were handed out that had nothing to do with the minimum wages for people making well over the minimum wage, working for some of our country's major corporations? Is there a way that the Democrats can possibly gain credit for that? And they happen because of the CEO's own statements that because of the Trump tax policies.
Here was Yahoo Finance. They had a panel discussion. They say that if companies this year, like in Florida, and the states aren't going to raise the minimum wage, if companies are not going to support the minimum wage increase, you guys ready for this? Companies should make less money if they're going to pay less wages.
There is certainly anecdotal evidence, right? You had the Target story last week, mm-hmm, that people's hours are being cut, even as Target, mm-hmm, raised its minimum wage. I was actually talking to a friend this weekend who is in the bar and restaurant business who said they're trying to be creative about not having to hire as many people.
I mean, we're talking about people who are effectively working at poverty level.
So you're saying
these companies should just make less money.
Yeah, I am saying they should make less money because
the companies should make less money if they're not going to, because they're only paying poverty wages.
Based on paying people poverty wages. And if I sound a little bit like AOC, if I sound a little bit like Elizabeth Warren, if I sound a little bit like Bernie, so be it.
You do.
Because the problem with income and wage inequality is going to tear this country apart.
Sound a little bit like Karl really Marx. Think it's a
well, Roger, here, you know, we asked this question. What was it? This was on just a couple. We asked it recently with some of our guests. You know, for example, you got session coming up now in the upcoming week. Governor Ron DeSantis. Now, follow me for a second. Some of you will catch this. So just give me a I'll try to be brief. Governor Ron DeSantis was making the point about deregulation when it comes to barber hairstyles. Do we need all these extra hours for all this education? You need regulations. He gets it. But do you, if 40 hours will do it, why do you need 80 hours?
Exactly.
Okay, valid question, whether you agree with it or not. But here's the question. I was asking, well, who makes these determinations at the Department of Business Regulation when it comes to setting the hours in the financial world here in Florida? The hours for those that have to get a barber, hairstylist, cosmetologist, a CDL license. Is it the business community or is it bureaucrats? So let me throw this one at the audience or you, whoever. Who is determining what is considered poverty wages and what is considered, for example, $15 an hour is going to lift all rising boats? My question is, the tide will lift all rising boats. Why not? I'm being serious here. Why not $18 an hour? I mean, companies are setting their own. And the reason why, for example, like Target in the state of Florida, Taco Bell, by the way, got a news clip coming up. Managers will make over $100,000 a year. Taco Bell, I'll get to that in a moment. Companies are paying more money based on what they can perform, based on stock prices, based on profit margin, because they're also paying for healthcare benefits. They're paying for some of your dentists. They're paying for your work leave. They're paying for all of this stuff out there. Mm-hmm. So they're doing it based on the amount of money they can stay in. They still got to open a more brick and mortar. I mean, this is before the minimum wage laws in some states are increasing up to what they wanted to increase. What I'm asking is how do these guys in the government, even some of these, quote, economists out there, how do they determine what the wage should be set in order to get people out of poverty, but yet some of these companies sit back and go, well, we can only afford so much because of, my question is who's the barometer figure here? Who should be the deciding factor?
I'm thinking they're probably listening to economists, people who, you know, have got, you know, postgraduate degrees in economics. And what I'm thinking they're probably doing is taking the low wage after school job minimum wage worker and assuming that that person is a head of household trying to support a family of three.
Interesting.
And it's not really a good example.
So that's the question I would ask you. Who is coming up with the, I mean, I, as a former economics editor, we can tell you, but the bottom line, who's coming up with these numbers out there? If the companies can't pay more, they should make less. How about that issue? We'll continue this conversation in just a moment. Ed Dean, Roger Henderson. 831-0600. We're going to take your calls coming up next. 904-831-0600. Democrats, we played a clip a couple moments ago. They say, well, hey, if lower income wages, if wages are going up overall, it's because not of Trump's policy. And I got to tell you, Roger, I like the spin. I don't agree with it. But they say that's because of states that are run by Democrats. They're jacking up the minimum wage set by the electors in that, and the elected officials in that state. Do you agree with that? 831-0600, 904-831-0600. Always love hearing your views. Those are coming up next on Talk Radio WBOB.
Talk Radio, AM 600. 101.1 FM, WBOB.
With SRN News, I'm Jeremy House in Washington. Iraqi Prime Minister Abdel Mahdi has told the U.S. Secretary of State to send a delegation to Iraq tasked with formulating the mechanism for the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq. A statement from the Prime Minister's office says the request came in a telephone call between Abdel Mahdi and U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. Iran has invited the U.S. Accident Investigating Agency to take part in the probe of this week's crash of a Ukrainian jetliner near Tehran. The National Transportation Safety Board says it will evaluate its level of participation in the investigation. Iran is denying a missile hit a Ukrainian airplane that crashed near Tehran this week, and it's calling on the U.S. and Canada to release data backing their allegations. Global shares mostly rose Friday as worries receded now that the U.S. and Iran may be stepping closer to or to the might be receding from the edge of war. This is SRN News.
AM 600, 101.1 FM, WBOB News.
Good morning, I'm Jerry Lademan. Another call for an investigation into the JEA's plan to explore a sale late last year. A group called Our Jacks thinks the city-owned utility should have been more forthcoming about a potential sale and is questioning the whole bid process. One member of that group is a former JEA executive. Meanwhile, the current chair of the JEA board tells News 4 Jax the board would support an investigation of the matter by state's attorney Melissa Nelson. The union that represents Jacksonville sheriff's officers says a constitutional amendment passed in 2018 should keep the names of officers involved in shootings from being released. Marcy's Law protects certain information about crime victims. The Fraternal Order of Police says officers who shoot may have also been victims of a criminal attack and therefore deserve to have their rights protected, too. That's Jacksonville.radio news.
Good morning. On I-295 headed south at Pulaski, there has been a problem. It looks like either an accident, maybe a broken down car, but there's lots of congestion there this early in the morning. At I-10, I-95 and Butler Boulevard, we see no problems. Mostly cloudy today and a high of 72. This evening, a few clouds and a low of 66. Right now, it's 63 here at WBOB. Here's some of the top stories we're bringing you this morning. A U.S. Court of Appeals upholds former U.S. Representative Corrine Brown's federal fraud convictions. A new poll finds most Americans say they are financially better off today than they were 4 years ago. And climate researchers are being called out for predictions they made years ago concerning the environment that didn't happen.
Contact the Ed Dean Radio Show on AM 600 WBOB. By calling 831-0600, 831-0600, or email ed@wbob.com. AM 600 and 101.1 FM, WBOB.
Some of this is because a lot of states, which frankly are run by Democrats, are instituting minimum wage increases. So these blue-collar jobs are beginning to see increases for reasons other than Trump.
That's from the Financial Times, Peter Spiegel, 33 minutes after 6 a.m., 831-0600. Democrats are saying that, well, hey, listen, we see that wages are going up faster under President Trump than we saw under Obama, but they're saying it's not because of the policies of President Trump. Democrats, you just heard from that clip, according to the editor from the Financial Times, the reason why lower income wages and everybody's wages are going up is because Democrats in many of these, quote, states and in the country are running the show and have enacted minimum wage laws. It's a great spin. I got to admit, it's a good spin. Do you buy into that? 831-0600. Let's start some calls. Let's go with Alan. Alan, good morning. How are you?
Oh, great. I agree with you. That's a very clever spin on that minimum wage thing, but I think the truth be told that the increase in the economy is in spite of the minimum wage increase, not because of it. And this is part of the whole Democrat thing that Trump can do no right, no matter what happens. They're going to spin their way out of it. They cannot accept the success that he's had. For example, Nancy Pelosi talking about the bombing of the Iranian commander. If that intelligence was known that he was available and he didn't bomb them and he did carry out those strikes, he would say that it was his fault that those lives were lost. So he kills them. He kills the guy, prevents those attacks, and now she's saying that our American lives are at risk. You know, he'll never win in their eyes, and we're going to live with that until the election.
Yeah, that's a great point, man. Alan, thank you for calling this morning. Appreciate it. I mean, by the way, before I get to Sean here real quick, forget about what, follow me for a second, to Alan's point, forget what General Soleimani, or Soleimani, whatever his name
okay.
is. Forget about what he may have done.
What was he about to do?
No, hold on. Why don't we talk about what he did?
Yeah.
Okay? And Roger points out every day in this morning show, how come the media is not addressing the fact that these guys were right in our embassy?
Yeah. They were burning, setting fires at the U.S. Embassy.
Yeah.
They're using battering rams that you see law enforcement use to knock down drug dealers' houses, to knock down the fence of the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad.
Let's go to Sean on line two. Hey, Sean, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Yeah, I 100% with Alan, who called just a minute ago. But I will say it might be a small sample size in the scheme of things, but I work for an international company that has thousands of low-wage earners across the different states. And as a corporation, we've raised everybody, all of those low-wage earners, because we're competing for these labor resources, guys, and it is not easy to retain, to recruit, retain, and attract these employees at the minimum wage. So we've done that across the board, and that has nothing to do with the minimum wage acts in these states.
Sean, what a great point you just brought out. So, Sean, let me, if I may, without putting words in your mouth, but if I miss something, please correct me. What you are saying, I think you are correct, Sean, that the reason why wages are going up, as you just said, it's a tight labor market. We want good employees, so we're going to pay them more money. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. They're leaving our industry, our professional industry, and going to places to retail and things like that because they pay as much or more. And we have to, you know, retain them. So our wages have been increased to keep them and hold them and recruit them.
Good call, Sean. Sean, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
All right. Good point. 831-0600. This is, of course, as you know it, Talk Radio WBOB. Here on our newsmaker line, our good friend, a man who does cover this quite a bit, former executive director of the Florida Democratic Party. He's also a columnist for many publications, also with ours, at floridadaily.com. Barney Bishop. So, Barney, you've heard from the audience. You travel throughout the state, and you're out of Tallahassee, and you hear this. I want to get to the Taco Bell thing in a second. You hear this argument that, hey, the reason why we need the minimum wage here in Florida with John Morgan, it's because it's so successful in other states. That's the reason why, according to Democrats, wages are going up, Barney.
Well, wages have already been going up because because there is competition in the marketplace. We have the lowest unemployment and the lowest minority unemployment rates in generations. So the truth of the matter is that minimum wage is just that. It's for young people or other people that have no experience whatsoever on their resume. And it's a big question mark whether an employer, how much they're going to pay them to do a job in which they've got no track record to indicate if they would be a good employee or not.
Hey, Barney, let me interrupt you real quick. The minimum wage and all these amendments are going to make it to the 2020 ballot here in the state of Florida. This one I'm always fascinated about. And follow me. I think there is, okay, it's got to get this 60% threshold. The majority of those, I think it would pass if it was at 50. But for the minimum wage, for those of you tuning in, there will be on the ballot coming up, it will start at $10 an hour and then it gradually increase 5 years down the road, 5 to 6 years to $15 an hour. I have said, I think it will pass, and this is the argument from both sides. People are like, hey, why do we need the minimum wage of $10? Most of these companies paying well over the minimum wage. And, of course, Barney, the Democrats, again, the spin is, well, wait a second. If you guys are paying more than $10 an hour, why should it matter if we set the minimum wage at 10? So, Barney, so some of those in the business community, even at the Chamber of Commerce, I've done some talk to some of these guys, they have said off the record, you know, this thing's going to pass. We don't want to fight this. But then again, as of lately, you know, I was talking to Bill Hurley, you know, Bill from the National Federation of Independent Business. He says, wait a second. You look at this, there's polling going on that this thing is right at 60%. I mean, that is a possibility that it may not get the 60%. For example, if the governor comes out against us, do you think this is just an automatic that, hey, voters are going to vote for this coming up later this year?
No, I don't. But you know why? Because most of the businesses in Florida are small businesses. And these are the ones that can't absorb a minimum wage increase that's going to jump it all the way to a beginning wage of $10 and go from there up to $15. Restaurants, small mom-and-pop businesses, they're competing. And they are competing in some cases with big box retailers and a lot of other competitors. And it's going to be a very big problem. So you have all of these people that are small business people in this state. They're going to be talking to their wives, going to be talking to their children. They're going to be talking to their friends. I didn't know that there was a poll showing that it's barely at 60%, but I'm not convinced that it's going to pass automatically.
Barney Bishop.
It's going to be a big challenge.
Barney Bishop is the former executive director of the Florida Democratic Party. Listen to this clip. CBS News. Florida managers in for Taco Bell that are around now making anywhere from $50,000 to $80,000 could make over $100,000 later this year. This is clip number 15.
Taco Bell wants to give some of its workers the whole enchilada. The fast food chain will begin offering, this is interesting, a $100,000 salary for restaurants' general managers at certain locations. That starts later this year. For some of the managers out there, that's a 50% raise. Taco Bell will also begin offering at least 24 hours of paid sick time, 3 days per year, for workers in all of its corporate-owned restaurants.
Now, Barney, for public disclosure, everybody would know this, you're a big-time lobbyist also out of Tallahassee. You've actually, without giving so much away, you've actually represented those that own Taco Bell companies out there. Is this, tell me something right here. I mean, a manager can make over $100,000 working for that fast food chain.
Well, that makes sense, you know, especially if they're in an area where they're generating millions of dollars in revenue and profit. So you have to pay what the market will bear. And that goes back to your second caller this morning that talks about competition in the marketplace. Look, businesses are doing better, but small businesses have a very thin profit margin. And so you've got to, the restaurant industry is going to be the one that's going to be hurt the most by this wage increase. But it's encouraging to see that huge companies, multinational corporations like Taco Bell, McDonald's, and Burger King all around the world, Kentucky Fried Chicken, that they may be increasing their salaries on their own just to compete to get the best people to manage their operations.
By the way, I love to hear the Democrats spend this, what part of the minimum wage is actually jacking up these numbers to six figures. Here's another story we've covered the last few days where there's a bill by a Montana U.S. Senator Stephen Daines. This is an issue that I would like to at least see have some sort of debate that may take place in the U.S. Senate. Listen, we actually got this clip from PBS where now it would bring up a bill. And you've covered this a lot. You've covered a lot of articles on the gun issue in Florida, that if you have a concealed weapons permit and or you're just a, you don't have a concealed weapons permit, you're a law-abiding citizen, you want to be able to take your gun across state lines, that you don't have to fear about being arrested because it may not be in the glove box or in the backseat of your car in a bag. Listen to this clip.
One of nine states and the District of Columbia that don't recognize other states' concealed carry laws. One North Carolina congressman proposes to allow qualified concealed gun owners from one state to carry and possess in another state that permits concealed carry, the same way one state recognizes another's driver's license.
Now, those that oppose it, listen to this. This is Robert Moore. He's with this group, Barney, how you like these names, Coalition for Peace Action. He says, wait a second, I thought all of you Second Amendment guys, you guys love states' rights. He goes, technically, listen to this clip, because by going down this road by having a federal law, are you not trampling on states' rights when it comes to the issue of guns? Here it is.
This is the other irony of this, is that it flies in the face of what is usually a cardinal rule for Republicans, something that they believe is very, very important in terms of states' rights. This tramples on those.
You know, that's another great spin, Barney. I like a states' rights issue, but on this one, the Second Amendment, I don't know if it's going to go anywhere in the U.S. Senate, but it's a good debate. Some states have an interstate agreement with other states that they will recognize certain laws. Should there be a one-size-fits-all when it comes to either law-abiding citizens, or maybe should we start it out with concealed weapon permit holders, Barney?
I think we should start it out with concealed weapon permit holders, but I was thinking the same thing that you are, that, look, the Second Amendment to the Constitution applies to all 50 states. Now, if the states want to say that their own citizens can't do things, that's all right. But listen, if you're just transiting between one state to another, and there's no reason for you not to have reciprocity. So, but this is, you know, the anti-gun people can wrap up any argument. They can talk out of both sides of their mouth very, very well. The guy is making certainly a valid point about states' rights, but the problem is the Constitution trumps states' rights.
Hey, by the way, Roger and I were talking about within the last week, since, you know, first of the year back on the radio, and we were talking about some of the predictions coming up for 2019, and for 2020. And I, right now, I still agree with Roger. Roger's prediction on the Democratic primaries is Biden, right?
Yeah, I think Biden.
Hold on.
Biden is
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Ryan.
I was going to say Biden is probably going to be the president to pick for the Democrat side. And I'm thinking he's probably going to pick either Harris or maybe Booker as his running mate.
Oh, man.
No?
I think Klobuchar.
I think Klobuchar could be
there. What do you think, Barn?
Well, in fact, I gave a speech at the Sunrise Rotary Club on Tuesday morning, and I predicted exactly what Roger said. I said that Biden would be the nominee. I think he picks Kamala Harris.
Really?
California. Mm-hmm. Although he doesn't need it. She's an African-American woman. But I think the better choice, though, is Senator Amy Klobuchar. So, Roger, you and I are thinking the same way.
Yeah, on the same page.
And by the way, Barney, I don't have to put words in your mouth. I think, and Barney's, what he's saying is that he doesn't need, because she's an African-American, because Biden is well-liked, especially in South Carolina, by those in the black community. Right, Barn?
Yeah, but he gives him the opportunity to motivate the African-American community by saying, look, I'm going to put the first African-American woman on the vice presidential slot. And that would help to motivate African-Americans across the country. I still don't think that Biden wins. Trump is going to win Florida, and Trump is going to win the presidential election. But I think Biden is his toughest opponent, and I wouldn't pick Corey because Corey's East Coast.
Well, Corey has been.
Biden's already got.
What is this, a Biggie versus Tupac, and East Coast versus West Coast?
Corey Booker, though, has been playing extra nice, though, at the debates. He doesn't really attack, in quotations, anyone. He's trying to be nice. It seems like he's running for VP.
Yeah, I think he is. But I think Klobuchar is really the sleeper one because they need the Midwest. They need to take back Michigan and Minnesota, and they could need to punch into the heartland, which is Trump country, and Klobuchar gives them the best chance.
Hey, well,
and she's a
real Booker helps them real, in the Midwest.
Real quick, Roger, wasn't there a story where there was a few black DJs or a podcast where they were claiming that they didn't think that Kamala Harris was black enough? Remember that?
I didn't see that.
Because is she from the islands?
Her father's Jamaican.
Right.
Which, you know, makes her ethnically the same identical race as black Americans. And her mother is an East Indian immigrant, I believe.
Yeah.
Trinidad.
So she didn't have her street cred on that. And I was like, really?
Yeah, I know. So, come on,
right.
Grow up.
Barney Bishop, former executive director of the Florida Democratic Party. Barney, good to have you on.
Thanks a lot, Ed. And Roger, keep thinking right way, bud.
Okay, man.
Interesting. Kamala Harris and/or Cory Booker. A lot more coming up next. Ed and Roger. 48 minutes after 6 a.m., Talk Radio WBOB.
Good morning. In St. John's County, 95 North, at mile marker 309, there has been an accident. Cars involved are both in the left and right shoulders. And if you are on I-10 headed east, you'll see slowdown starting at Cassett, and it's busy down to Stockton.
Here's your community calendar from WBOB.
Saturday, January 11th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., it's the Fernandina Beach Marketplace Farmers Market on North 7th Street in Fernandina Beach. Saturday, January 11th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., it's the Riverside Arts Market under the Fuller Warren Bridge on Riverside Avenue. And Saturday, January 11th at 7 p.m., it's the Jacksonville Iceman versus the Brampton Beast at Vistar Veterans Arena.
For more information or to have your event included, visit WBOB.com.
Florida's Everglades, a sportsman's paradise, an angler's wonderland, and a big part of Florida's economy. But today, Florida's Everglades is on life support. Florida is doing its part, but now the politicians in Washington are dragging their feet. Don't let Florida's Everglades get swamped by D.C. politics. Visit EvergladesFoundation.org to learn how you can help.
Do you want to offer insurance to your employees but think it's too expensive? Florida Care Insurance is here to tell you that employee benefits can be much more affordable than you realize. If you can afford to give your employee a $2 raise, then you can afford employee benefits that will make you more competitive and help acquire and maintain quality employees. Let us help you invest in your company. Go to groupbenefits.solutions or call 265-4753. No matter the company's size, they can help. Call 265-4753 for your employee benefit solution.
Congratulations to Grassroots Natural Market in Fleming Island for winning the Best of Clay top spot in the health food category. Grassroots Natural Market, providing families in Clay County with the finest selection of fresh, nutritious foods available. Foods that are free from pesticides, hormones, and artificial preservatives. Grassroots offers a wide variety of gluten-free and wheat-free items, as well as a large selection of vitamins, herbs, and CBD oils. Grassroots Natural Market. They're on the East West Parkway next to the Fleming Island Theater. Call 541-0009. That's 541-0009.
Great news, folks. The Lighthouse Retirement Hour is finally available everywhere you listen on this great radio station Saturday and Sundays, or grab the iTunes podcast, the Spotify podcast, iHeart podcast, and coming soon to every device where you can say Siri or Alexa. If you love the combination of timely investing news, great conservative politics, you're going to love this show no matter how you listen. Get all the links on my website, LighthouseRetirement.com.
Mostly cloudy today, but only about a 1 in 10 chance of rain. We'll have a high of 72. This evening, a few clouds and a low of 66. Right now, it's 63 here at WBOB.
Financial issues with Dan Celia at 9, Dennis Prager at noon. Now back to the Ed Dean Radio Show on AM 600 and 101.1 FM. WBOB.
And here's some of the top stories we're bringing you this morning. Congress passes a non-binding resolution symbolically limiting the president's authority to take further military action against Iran. The U.S. Supreme Court begins looking at several significant cases, and Democrats are claiming victory for wages going up, as they say it's because some states are raising the minimum wage.
Contact the Ed Dean Radio Show on AM 600 WBOB by calling 831-0600, 831-0600, or email ed@wbob.com. AM 600 and 101.1 FM, WBOB.
A U.S. Court of Appeals has upheld that former Queen Corrine Brown, former U.S. representative out of the Northeast Florida, on federal fraud convictions. They said, hey, no, your appeal, forget about it. You're still in jail. She's in Sumterville. Where is that?
If I'm not mistaken, it's just north of Ocala.
Okay. I'm just trying to...
I'll look it up.
I was thinking somewhere else, Carolina's.
So she's within the listening audience range. She may be tuning in.
Yeah, she's waiting for Bernie Sanders to become president so she can vote from jail out there. Brown appealed her convictions and sentence. Remember, she, quote, mismanaged her finances out there, but pretty much she was busted for fraud. She went to trial in Jacksonville, was found guilty in May of 2017, 18 of 22 charges. She surrendered for her five-year prison sentence, which happened actually 2 years ago, coming up this month. I always remember the interview with News 4 Jax and Corrine Brown.
Either way, I am looking forward to my day in court and clearing my name.
Yeah.
So you're going to roll the dice and go to trial.
Ain't no question about that. On my tombstone, it will not be guilty. It will be that she stood up.
She stood up, and the judge says, no, ma'am, you may take a seat. I am not going to get rid of your appeals process.
And presented her case in court. And let the jury decide.
Are we going to see you on the stand in front of the jury?
Absolutely.
Oh, boy. Anyway, I think it was one of the best interviews I've ever seen.
Now, the basis for her appeal was that she felt that there was jury irregularities going on. One of the jurors, after deliberations had already begun, said that they heard from God that she was not guilty and to acquit. And because of that, that information got back to the judge. They dismissed that juror and then brought in an alternate. So apparently the appeals court didn't care.
Hey, forget him. I mean, the majority of those out there on the jury sat back and said she committed a crime.
Oh, yeah.
18 of 22. Predictions. I can't wait. We're going to get to this story coming up also in next hour. But one of the big stories out there is that climate predictions that were supposed to happen, that were predicted years ago, were supposed to come to fruition, Roger, when it came, as you guessed it, the Florida economy, everything else out there, when it came to at least the departure from a successful clean air, but all without the global warming out there. For the bottom line is that all of the nonsense been put out there by man and man-made global warming, that all of these climate predictions have not come to fruition out there. Here's a little bit, the top five most outrageous. This was a story that I saw up on Fox News, the top five most outrageous 2020 doomsday predictions that didn't pan out. Remember, the world's supposed to end in 10, 15, maybe 30 years. From 1990 to 2020, the Washington Post reported in 1990 that the U.S. was supposed to warm up by 6 degrees. According to NASA, it's only warmed up by 1 degree. You ready for another one that was supposedly oil? Oil. Roger believes oil is going to run out someday. It's not. Oil will effectively run out by 2020. CNN ran a headline.
Really?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
I wonder, you know, what would be the impact? You know, it has gotten low. I think Shell, they weren't expecting that. You know,
what do you mean it's gotten low?
Well,
how do you know? We haven't even touched the surface.
It's not what it used to be. I think they say that Saudi Arabia has less oil now than they.
Roger,
what?
If we are self-sufficient, mm-hmm. How is it that we have less oil?
What I was saying is that when these predictions were made, they didn't think Shell would ever be a possibility. Shell is a new technology that they're getting oil that they didn't realize they had access to.
But we're still not going to run out of oil. So here it is. CNN ran a headline.
We'll keep on supporting the terrorists. Okay.
Really? So America's on its own. How's that terrorist?
It's sold to the global market, and because we're in the game as much as they are now, then we are ensuring that they've got a market for their only natural resource. Wouldn't you not say that?
Well, let me ask you this. China's a communist dictatorship. I think they're probably one of our number one enemies.
At least they're not trying to fly airplanes into our skyscrapers.
True. They're probably trying to do more cyber war attack and other things out there as well. Does that mean they're just as soft? No, I think that, to me, I would heavily worry about them. 2020... CNN ran a headline in 2003, world oil and gas was going to run out. The New York Times reported in 1989 that the untapped pools of domestic oil are dwindling. Not happening. 2020, no more glaciers will be on Mount Kilimanjaro. Actually, that was done by CNN. Another one in 2003, it's now estimated that, guess what? They were going to disappear. Not happening. 1 billion people will starve to tech revolution. That was done in 2000. Not happening. By 2020, Reuters in 1997 says millions will die from climate change. That has not happened either.
A stunning new report shows many major coastal cities around the world could be underwater by 2050 in our lifetimes.
Oh, so now let's move the goalpost a little bit further back.
Scientists from Climate Central say that means 300 million people would be waterlogged in just 30 years. The original projections were already frightening. Now we have these new projections, even more concerning.
Rising seas could affect way many more people than they previously thought. So
there's the media there for you, NBC and CBS. By the way, CNN says national park signs warning glaciers gone by 2020. Guess what? The Glacier National Park is replacing the signs that predicted glaciers would be gone by 2020 and admitted that the park was told this by the U.S. Geological Survey, that the complete melting of the glaciers was no longer expected to take place due to changes in the forecast models. Remember, those were done about a decade ago. So all of this climate prediction that seems to be just taking place and place and place. Listen to Justin Hackins from the Heartland Institute. Is it interesting? We keep making predictions. It doesn't happen. We just continue to make more predictions.
Really cared about the environment. I mean, you really cared about it. The last thing you would want to do is control the entire or have the entire country run on solar and wind. Because if you had the entire country running on solar and wind, you would need a landmass the size of the state of California. What this has been about for 50 years, they've been making climate change predictions for 50 years. They've talked about the global population crisis, global cooling, how we're going to be running out of food. None of these things have happened. But they keep making the predictions because they believe that if they make them enough, people will listen to them.
Roger, what are the odds that you could be correct that we're going to run out of oil? And by the way, when are we going to run out of oil?
I'm not concerned. You know, I don't think we're going to run out of oil anytime real soon. I think we could probably in a couple of generations from now, and then aviation goes kaput. But the bigger issue for me is, you know, the economy and how it funds terrorism. And, of course, people in Australia right now may have an argument with you.
Did the environment start up all those fires?
I don't know.
Then why'd you throw that in there?
I think that some people probably say it did, though. I don't know. You ask me, what do I think? I say I don't know. I think they would probably have an argument with you, though.
I don't know what their argument would be. All right. 831-0600, 904-831-0600. More coming up next, 7 a.m. hour. Ed and Roger, Talk Radio, WBOB.